Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This episode, we talk about the troubleshooting process of a dead system, all the way from replacements to substitutions. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. You remember how I built a new computer earlier this year?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Yeah, and I was really super excited about it, mostly because my old machine, which was an EVGA X99.
Oh, gosh, getting old.
I mean, it was old when I built that machine, and then it basically just kind of carried me for many, many, many years.
So now, hold on. Does that mean I've built twice since you've built? Because that's weird.
I think it was three times,
actually. Oh, my gosh.
Seriously.
Man, overdue.
I think it was. Well, and the reason why is that, you know, I always have a system on the test bench.
Right.
And so, you know, I can get that new system itch. You know, I can scratch that by just firing up an old build. You know, some of it is the way that I do reviews at Hardware Asylum. And the other part of it is the overclocking nature that I've had, where I'll set up a machine sometimes for like just a couple of hours to go run a couple of benchmarks, get a score, and then tear everything down, put it back in the box.
Okay. Well, I get it though, because you want your daily driver to be stable and dependable, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't even overclocked.
And what?
I know, right? It's like I overclock on the bench, but I don't overclock my daily because I still need to be able to check email and write articles, do image manipulation, stuff like that.
Oh yeah, the day job, I get it.
Yep. Well, I wanted to build a new machine, and in the previous episode, I'll link it down in the show notes below, I went out to Newegg and I said, I want a 4090. Turns out you can get a 4090 in a bundle, or you could at the time.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So I got the Asus Z890 Extreme was the motherboard. It was like $1,000 motherboard.
Ooh, yeah, fancy.
I mean, it was the one that I would have requested from Asus, but I ended up buying it because I wanted the video card, right? And then I spent a whole lot of time putting together a water loop, put it into my build, and it had been working great.
Uh-oh.
Until earlier this week, as of the time that we're recording this, I get up, I walk into the office, and it was uncannily quiet.
Oh, not a good sign.
No, not so much. And I'm like, the computer's off. And that, at the time, didn't alert me, you know, it didn't scare me that much. Because sometimes when Windows updates, it will go and do an update, and then it will reboot your computer for you, you know, even though you don't want it to.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it won't come back. It'll just like, it'll reboot and shut down.
Yeah.
You know, I've had that happen.
Or hang, and you have to restart it again to get it to finish.
Yeah. Or,
Windows.
Or there could be like a rolling brownout, which will go and kill the power to everything. So then the clocks all flash. Well, none of that had happened. And so I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting. Let's hit the power button. Click. Nothing.
Good first step. Okay.
And I'm like, click, click. Nothing. And then I go and look my desktop speakers. They still have power.
Oh, that is definitely not a good sign.
Yeah. So then I'm like, well, let's check the power strip. You know, power strip is what the speakers are plugged into. Right. But I'm like, well,
maybe it tripped. Okay.
Something.
Start easy, right? This is a good troubleshooting discussion, right?
Because yeah.
What do you want to do? You want to eliminate the obvious? We always joke, right? Is it turned on? Is it plugged in?
Is the mouse at the corner of the mouse pad? You need to pick it up and move it. You know, one of those things, right? So I'm going through. It's like, well, this is obviously a power problem. So I'm looking around and it's like, I knew it wasn't the power strip because my speakers were plugged into the same thing.
But makes sense.
I have had power strips like just burn one port. So I get down there and I like, okay, I'm going to move it to the other one. It's like, nope, that didn't help. And
oh,
then,
hold on.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking classic troubleshooting.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like this is a concept that we should give a name, right? When we do basic hardware troubleshooting.
Okay.
Substitution and elimination.
Okay.
So if you can eliminate it, that's what you're doing, right? You're eliminating that it's the port or that it's the strip or whatever. So elimination is cheap. Substitution.
that takes a little bit more effort, yes. And that's a good thing to bring up. And if somebody is trying to troubleshoot the machine at home or for a family member, kind of remember, you need to either figure out what is and isn't working and then try to swap things out if you can.
Yeah, and if you don't feel comfortable with hardware, you can always watch the IT Crowd.
The IT Crowd.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that show on Netflix or something?
It's a comedy about hardware tech support.
Oh, yes. That's so awesome. So anyhow, I got to the point where I'm like messing around with power, and I'm like, this isn't actually helping. And then I was like, okay, well, I don't want to deal with this right now. So I actually pulled out my laptop, fired that up so I could check my morning email. And then I had some errands to run. So I went and took care of those.
Right. Because you got to set aside some time once you get the basics covered.
Yeah. And it's like, well, it's not working. So I went to my fallback, which is just basically my personal laptop. And it has everything on there. It's almost a direct mirror. So I have email hooked up so I can actually pull up an email client and check emails, and I'll get whatever's on the server, pull that down. I have network access on there so I can get to all the files that are stored on my network server, because I don't store anything on the local hard drive on my PCs.
Smart.
That way they're backed up.
That's right. Everybody should have a backup. Maybe even off-site.
Off-site, yeah.
Well, that's what they tell you anyway.
Yeah, that's what they tell you. But in this particular case, the fact that my desktop PC wasn't working still allowed me to get access to anything I needed because it wasn't on the local machine.
It's like a great advertisement for getting a NAS. Get a NAS.
Get a NAS. They're on Amazon. We will put a link that can help us out with some affiliate money.
Affiliate money is good. Everybody should have a NAS. If you're a serious hardware enthusiast, you just spent, you know, $3,000 on a computer build, you should have a NAS.
Yeah, you should have a NAS. So, any event, I get done with my errands and I have a good hour to the point where I can kind of say, well, let's dive into the machine again. Let's check it out. So what do you suppose is the next thing I checked?
Well, let's see. You did the external. Mm-hmm. You checked the ports. You checked, well, I mean, I guess the power switch could be broken, right? But
oh, yeah.
So that's probably, you know, something that you want to check into. But I'm still suspicious of the power supply, you know.
Yeah, well, and that's what I checked next. So I took the side panel off the case, and the Asus Extreme, the motherboard I have, it has an onboard power button.
Nice.
Because, you know, benchtop controls. So I'm like, well, let's hit this button.
Oh, there you go. Eliminate that case switch.
Yeah, and no, it didn't help.
Oh, more bad news.
So I go to the garage and file through some of my overclocking stuff, and I find my power supply tester.
Excellent.
And it's the one from Thermaltake. They don't make it anymore, as far as I can tell. But it allows you to plug in all sorts of ports. If you have the 24 power in there, you can plug in Molex and SATAs and stuff like that. But it has a button. So you plug it in, you press the button, and then that should activate everything.
That's a really nice unit. You don't need a unit that nice if you're out there. But yeah.
But it has a digital display, and it'll let you know what the individual voltages are on the different ports.
Very nice.
It's super awesome. Well, guess what happened?
Everything was green?
Everything worked perfectly.
Oh, not the power supply.
Not the power supply.
Oh, this is starting to get expensive.
Yeah, although it did activate everything. So, you know, the DIY water cooling loop turned on, all the fans turned on, all the RGB lights turned on.
And you just plugged the 24 pin in?
I just plugged the 24 pin in.
So okay.
It didn't activate the motherboard, but it activated all the accessories that were plugged into the Molex and SATA ports.
That's a good troubleshooting step. So let's talk about what we learned from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? So what do we know? The power supply comes on.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
It's good. If you have RGB, it lights up, but at least you can check your voltages, which were also good.
Yep. They were all where they needed to be.
Okay. The rest of the system powered on. I'm using air quotes because that's... Mm-hmm. So we know that you're getting good power out to your devices. So that means it's something that's plugged into the motherboard or the motherboard itself, most likely.
Yeah. And that was also the point where I'm like, okay, now I need to dedicate some more time because, again, it's fully water cooled.
So you can't just take it out.
No. So I have a water block and a vertical mounted GPU. That's the 4090. Yeah,
fancy.
And that is blocking the sound card that's plugged into the motherboard. And then also the ribbon cable that connects the video card to the motherboard. So all that is behind there. It's all hidden.
Sure.
And
so that you haven't moved this thing, right? So this isn't like a I knocked something loose kind of moment.
Right.
Correct. Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
Yep. It was... Yeah, sitting in the corner. But, well, and part of the reason that it sits there is because the thing is freaking heavy. It's like over 50 pounds.
Oh, so this takes me back to my troubleshooting days again. We'll talk basic troubleshooting again for a minute. Uh-huh. The most common questions that I used to teach when I was teaching troubleshooting is, did it ever work? Question number one. In this case, yes. When did it stop working? Right? Usually people can tell you that or get pretty close. And then, of course, the big difficult question is, what has changed?
Yeah. And in this case, to answer your question, Technically, nothing had changed. Oh. However, the night before, I did have to reboot the computer because the sound coming out of the sound card got all garbled.
Oh, interesting.
Now, that garbly goop coming out of there is kind of, it's a common problem with Sound Blaster, at least the AE5s. It's something with the driver and, you know, the fact that you have power plugging into the sound card to power the entire device.
Right. So something's getting confused.
Yep. A quick reboot always fixed it.
Sure.
And so I went and rebooted the computer and it comes back. Sound was good. It still was a little garbled, but it was better than it was.
Oh, but it could have been something else. You just didn't know.
I didn't know. And then, of course, I go to sleep and wake up and the machine died. So, you know, it probably unrelated, but in this case, I'm going to say that it was probably a symptom that I should have paid a little bit more attention to.
Your PC was crying for help and you just didn't know it.
It was. It's so sad. We need to add AI to our system so that they can talk to us when it's upset.
I don't know that that's a good thing.
No, that's like the start of Skynet, really.
That's right. Last thing I need is my computer whining at me about my hardware and software choices, and I'm just going to leave it there and not go any deeper.
Yeah. All right. So at this point, I needed to move the machine out to the garage because I'm not going to drain coolant that has dye in it.
Oh, yeah.
In the house on the carpet.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. So I took all of the glass off. This is also an important tip because I told you how heavy the machine was.
Right.
That was not including the heavy tempered glass panels that are on it.
Yeah, and that adds up quick, especially with today's modern corner office styles.
Yeah. Well, and I have the View 71, which is a big case from Thermaltake. It has two glass panels for the main doors, and it has a glass panel at the top and a glass panel in the front, and then gaps so that, you know, it can breathe.
Of course, of course.
But they're all easily removed. So the doors, two screws, and you can lift them off the pins. And then the top and front is four screws, or cap screws, basically. You lift the glass off. And then at that point, pick it up and carry it out to the garage, you know, and put it down a couple of times while I'm opening up doors and resting because the thing is heavy.
Of course, we'll have a link to the case review.
Oh, of course.
In the notes, along with all of the hardware that we're discussing that we've reviewed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you're curious about that kind of stuff.
Go buy it through our affiliate link. Did we say that already? Yeah. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.
We're teaching you something here.
All right.
So I bring that out to the garage, and then it's a matter of, like, I have a drain port, but the drain ports in modern DIY loops are not always in the best location.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you have to do, like, crazy PC yoga to get all the liquid out anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can build your drain so that it will drain everything out of the machine, but usually you compromise the flow of the water going through the machine to do that. And in this case, it was not an optimal location. It was at the bottom of one of the main runs that goes into the radiator, which is great.
Yeah, that's good.
But it was in a point where if I just undid the nut, it would just drain all over the bench and then all over inside the machine. So I had to do a little bit of yoga, like you were saying, and basically find a soda bottle.
Right.
Cut the bottom out of it and use that as a funnel to go and capture the liquid and then run it into a tub so I can drain the loop.
That's a great hot tip.
And of course, had I been, I don't know, I've always resisted doing this because I think it's kind of stupid, but where I have the drain, I could have put a ball valve.
Yeah.
And then with the ball valve, you can put a cap on it so that it definitely won't leak.
Yeah, we've done some builds with those. In fact, I think my last hard tube, we did that.
Yeah.
But we also cut a hole in the bottom so you could direct drain it.
Yeah, so you just pull it out and as it would drain, no problem. Well, with the ball valve, you can remove the cap and then you can put on a barb fitting and then run a hose wherever you need it to go.
Right.
Open up the ball valve and then you can drain it. Well, adding a ball valve to where it was would have destroyed the look that I was after.
Oh, no. Aesthetics again.
But, you know, in this case, it's like, well, form over function. I wanted to have it look good. And I was also under the impression that I wouldn't ever have to do this.
Well, why would you, right? I mean, modern hardware is really difficult to kill.
It is. And, I mean, you really have to try. Although there are a lot of people out there that somehow they just look at a piece of computer kit and it just breaks.
Well, I mean, it's not even talking about some of the weird design issues like the video card plug issues we've had and some of the issues with the 14 series Intel processors, and go Google these things if you're curious.
I swear that it's really just people sabotaging themselves because they don't know any better.
No, you're just missing simple stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we don't talk often enough about upgrading your BIOS when you buy a motherboard, for example. Just basic. You're going to install new drivers. Why wouldn't you update your hardware?
Yeah, update the firmware. I mean, it's really easy, and it's not like it was a long time ago where you could flash the firmware, and if it crashed halfway through, then it would kill your entire machine.
Exactly.
You have backup BIOSes that will go and fix itself, so you can go and fix that.
Not only that, but these days you can just do it with software off your desktop. You don't have to mess with any of that hardcore technical mumbo jumbo.
Oh yeah, that was a pain in the butt. But, well, and I digress, but in college, I was flashing the BIOS in my computer in my dorm room, and it failed to the point where it wouldn't work. Oh. And I'm like, well, how do I fix it now? Well, you could remove the BIOS chip. And it turns out that I could get online, I think it was through eBay. I said, hey, can you flash this firmware onto this chip and send me the chip? And it was a service that he offered. It was like $20 or something.
Well, that's not terrible.
I'm like, cool. All right, well, here it is. Here's the firmware I want. And about a week later, the chip showed up. I plugged it in. Computer worked great. And at that point, I'd never flashed that firmware ever again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, why would I? Anyhow, so in this case, I did some yoga, got the water out of the machine, all so that I could start removing some of the tubes to get the video card out of there.
Right.
So that I could start the first phase in troubleshooting, which is remove the expansion cards.
That's right. That's the elimination part that we were just talking about.
Yep. So for the vertical GPU, you could just remove the ribbon cable. And, you know, you remove the ribbon cable from the motherboard, that will disconnect the video card basically. But I had a sound card in there, which I already mentioned was giving me some fits. So I'm like, I need to get that
suspicious,
out.
Suspicious, right? Yeah.
But I needed to remove the video card to get to that. So draining the loop at this point.
Right.
And so get that out of there, try to power it on, nothing. I'm like, okay, so it wasn't any of those expansion cards. At this point, I could have plugged them back in. But I know from experience that I should be able to fire up a motherboard even without expansion cards or a video card.
Yeah, and you should at least get lights. I mean, so you've done good substitution.
Mm-hmm. So the next thing was memory.
Yeah.
So I had maxed out the motherboard. It had all 4 memory DIMMs filled. And that has been a problem in the past where Intel processors don't like having all of the memory slots filled.
Absolutely. Well, especially if you're doing the new larger modules or high-speed modules, right? Yep. They're a little finicky.
Really finicky. And I mean, to the point where it's like, if you mess with just a couple of the timings, it will kill the board. Not necessarily kill it, but it will just make it so it won't boot and then goes into a...
And I feel obliged to mention that even the factory overclocking, the XMS profiles...
Mm-hmm. XMP.
XMP. Even the XMP profiles will sometimes cause your system problems, and they're designed to run at those speeds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're also assuming that it's just 2 sticks, which is...
But there are 4 slots on the board. Come on.
You've got to be able to expand. So in any event, the removing memory out of the machine will... It's a troubleshooting thing, right?
Right.
So I moved all of them. It didn't do anything. And these boards will... If they fire up, they will start complaining that, hey, there's no system memory.
Well, yeah, you should at least get some activity. But I feel like each one of these steps is getting progressively more expensive.
Yes. And so, for instance, had I removed all the memory and then the board came to life, then it would be a process of like, okay, one of these memory sticks is probably bad.
Right.
So then it would be like, let's install 2 of them and put them into the approved slots and then power it up to see if it works. If it does work, pull that memory out, put in the other 2 sticks to see if it works.
Exactly.
And if it does work, then it's a problem with one of the memory DIMMs on the motherboard and the fact that I'm installing 4 sticks. So then at that point, I'm like, well.
Could be bad RAM also.
It could be.
But you can test that by swapping the slots. Good substitution.
Exactly. And you can do that without having extra memory available. Now, for me, I could go to the shelf and just grab any memory stick and swap them in there, but... In this case, I didn't need to because removing all the memory didn't change anything.
So still dead. So we are running out of things we can troubleshoot very quickly. Mm-hmm. We're down to motherboard and processor.
Oh, no, we have one more thing.
Oh, the drives.
Yeah.
The drives, yes.
So I have an NVMe drive in the PCI Express slot at the top or PreCX Express 5 slot at the top of the motherboard. Luckily, well, or unfortunately, whichever way you want to think about it, the heatsink is really easy to take off there. So basically, you just slide a latch to the side, it pops off, and then you slide a little plastic tab, and then the drive pops out.
Yeah, it's a great design.
Super awesome. And I could have taken that drive out without tearing the whole system apart, but I'm like, well, I'm going to start with the expansion slots.
Well, the odds of it being that drive very small, and super I can small. Understand if you were already suspicious of that sound card, why you'd go there first.
Yep, exactly. So I pulled the drive out, tried to power it on, nothing. So it's like,
Ooh, there now we really are back to motherboard and processor.
So at that point, it was a matter of, I got to pull the water block off and I pulled the processor out. If you have a bare motherboard and you apply power to it, it's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So I could pull the processor out and try to fire up the machine, but it's not going to do anything. So at this point, this is where you have to do the more expensive substitution.
Yeah.
So I either take another processor out of the collection and put it in the board to see if it fires up. But in the past, if the motherboard had died, because I've had boards die on the overclocking bench, swapping in the processor will sometimes kill that processor.
Ooh, that's dangerous.
So what I've done instead in this case is I had another Z890 board set up on the test bench. I pulled my processor out because I had the 265K, the Core i7 Ultra. I pulled that processor out of my machine, put it into that other machine, fire it up. Perfect.
Wow.
So the processor works. I even put that memory into that board and memory works. So at this point, I eliminated everything except for the motherboard.
Well, that makes sense. And I think we've got our culprit, but I want to stop on this last step because if you don't have a big pile of hardware, right, how would you have handled that?
Well, without that, I would have had to rely on contacting ASUS and saying, hey, I'm having trouble with my machine. I don't have any other way of testing this. What can I do?
And you're most likely headed for an RMA. Mm-hmm. And I think I would agree with you. I would go after the motherboard first because it's usually the easiest to get an RMA on.
Yeah. Well, and especially since it's within, I've been using it, 6 months, something like that. And they're warranted for 3 years or 5 years. And in my experience, whenever a motherboard has ever died, which has not happened very often, I might add, it's always been in the first 6 months.
Yeah, and I've had that same experience, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the caveat there is that you want to buy a good name brand motherboard with a good warranty from a company that you trust for just this sort of thing. And this is part of the reason why we talk about the realistic life of a PC being 3 to 5 years for an enthusiast. Because about then is when most of your core components start to come out of warranty. Mm-hmm. And that shouldn't matter if you buy really good components from a company that you trust, a name brand company like ASUS, for example, or MSI.
Yeah. Well, case in point, my X99 from EVGA, I was using that for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it was flawless. And so, you know, it was also a quality motherboard, but it didn't, well, it lasted through the warranty period and it just kept working. So.
Well, and it still works.
Still works.
You're just not using it.
Yeah.
But the other side of that coin too is sometimes you get the lottery and you send in one chipset and they send you an equivalent board that is newer and better.
Yes. And I've also heard horror stories where you get something back and it doesn't work.
Oh no. Or somebody's refurb. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have like the Amazon refurbs, right?
Right.
You get the replacement. It turns out, well, it was already broken. So now you have to deal with Amazon saying you ship me a broken piece of work.
Another good reason to make a good purchase, even if it costs a few dollars more.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing about ASUS is that their RMA process is one of the smoothest that I've had to deal with.
Oh, how did that go?
Well, it was basically you hop online, you go to their website. I had already registered that motherboard, so it was on my account already. So
activate that warranty, smart.
And then you go and basically fill out a form. It's like, who are you? Where are you from? What is the problem? So then you put in the motherboard serial number, it pulls off of your account, and it's like, what are the symptoms? And then it goes through some basic troubleshooting. It's like, hey, did you do this? Hey, did you do this? Hey, did you do this?
Yeah, that's to eliminate the basics, smart.
And it's basically everything that I had already done. The one thing that I didn't tell or I didn't talk about was resetting the CMOS. But in this particular case, the fact that the board would not fire up is not a CMOS problem.
Yeah, well, and you have a really robust BIOS system on that. So, I mean, you can kind of eliminate
that as being a culprit anyway.
Yeah, like, that's a pretty technical step.
Well, and had it been an issue like what you had mentioned before, it's like, well, were you overclocking the memory or overclocking the processor and then you go to reboot and then it doesn't do anything? That would be a system of like reset the CMOS and get back to the basics and then have the machine fire up and then you can mess with it again. And, you know, I've done that routine thousands of times on the overclocking bench. And in this case, that it wouldn't have applied. But that was one of the questions that ASUS had asked. It was like, well, did you reset the CMOS? I was like, well, yes, but I didn't because it didn't matter. And then after that, it was, well, we have everything we need. And they issued me an RMA number, and then they send you an email with the instructions of what you're supposed to do next. And about an hour later, I get another email with three attachments that basically, one of them applied because it was for a motherboard. The other one was for like a phone or a monitor and stuff like that.
Okay, so yeah, they just kind of bulked it.
And then the last one was package instructions. It's like, how should you pack your stuff so it shows up good?
Trash bag, lick it a couple times.
Oh yeah, and put in some dog poo and some fire starter. In this case, it was like, you know, just make sure that, I guess the one thing that caught me off guard, which makes sense, is they said, do not send it in the original packaging.
Why?
Because once it goes to the repair facility, they will swap it out with a approved refurb of that particular board. If they don't have a approved refurb, they will give me a new one.
Oh, nice.
So the refurb that we'll likely get will be just in a brown box. So it'll be...
Yeah, that makes sense because it's somebody else's return that they've done the repair work on. And I know some people are nervous about that, but I've always liked at least certified warrantied refurbs because they've been through that process not once, but twice. And the second time, very thoroughly checked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, at that point, they're extending the warranty onto the machine that they're sending you.
Right.
And like I said, if it happens that they don't have that in stock, they will go and replace it with something equivalent or better, is what they said.
Right.
Which would be the same board or a new board. I had the option of buying a label from them so I could ship it through FedEx. They basically sent me a QR code. And once I got it all packaged up, I wrote the RMA number on the outside, took it to FedEx. They scanned the QR code. They printed the label and said, all right, here you go. Do you want a receipt? I was like, yeah.
Of course I do.
I want to know that it actually left. Another thing that they mentioned was to take pictures of all of your item before you package it up so that you can document what it looked like before it left.
Very smart. Make sure that you get the serial number or model number very clear in your pictures.
And I think part of it was for people that are sending back like monitors or phones or laptops and stuff.
Stuff that could be damaged.
Yeah, it definitely damaged during shipping. It's like, well, because ASUS is only going to cover their mistake. They're not going to cover any mistake in shipping or, you know, it's like if you ship it and they say, well, the screen cracked. Well, if you tried to hide it, you ship it off saying, well, yeah, that wasn't damaged when it showed up. It's like, well, where's the picture?
Oh, yeah.
If they don't have a picture, they can't prove it. So then it's like, well, you get to pay for the screen repair now, too.
Yeah, that's no good. Now, back in the day, and it's been a long time since I've had to do any large piece of hardware, they used to offer cross shipping, right? So you could kind of give them like a credit card for safety reasons, right? And they would cross ship, so you didn't have that much downtime.
Yeah, and EVGA was one of the companies that did that religiously. So you could, because you would deal with somebody in the RMA department. It wasn't just a website.
Right.
And you would give them a credit card. They would basically ship you a new item or a refurb item. And then if your item didn't show up, then they charged your card for that. For the part.
Yeah, really slick. Prevented downtime, but I'm guessing that's another relic of the bygone era.
It is. And in this case, I didn't really care so much. So, you know, while the machine is taken apart on the bench back there, I've been using my laptop and also the podcast machine as my desktop. And as I mentioned before, everything is on my network, so I don't need to have access to that hard drive. I did have to buy another copy of Office so that I
could
run Word and stuff like that, install some of the software that I was using on the desktop that I need to have. But you know, that's easy. And
and cheap. I mean, really.
Yeah. And overall, it worked out great. And hopefully, knock on plastic or wood or whatever, the board will show up. I'll get, you know, a perfect refurb to the point where it's not damaged. And then I can, you know, physically damaged in this case. Something I can put just back in, hook up all the tubes, put some water in, and fire it up.
So overall, how do you feel about the RMA experience, the customer service element?
I'm really impressed with ASUS. I mean, they've had to deal with RMAs for a long, long time, and they've really streamlined the entire process. And from what I've been told, they have multiple locations. So I had to send mine to San Francisco, but if you're on the East Coast, I've been told they go to Indiana or something like that.
Interesting. But yeah, I mean, that speeds things up.
Yeah. Well, and it could also be that motherboards go to San Francisco and video cards go somewhere else. You know, they have dedicated repair facilities. And, you know, overall, it was really smooth. And the fact that I could buy a shipping label from them instead of having to deal with going to FedEx and figuring out how much it needs to be and all that crap, you know, it's just pay them, I think it was like $25 for me to ship it. I could do a next day air that was like $85,
ouch,
but like, nah, that I don't really care that much.
Well, but the option exists for folks that don't have that extra hardware that might need it right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So overall, yeah, it was great. And now I'm just in the waiting process to see when my stuff comes back.
Well, by the time we get this published, we will probably have that machine back and functioning. You'll have to leave a quick update in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of me putting it stuff, putting everything back together if it shows up before I do the editing for this show.
All right, guys. Hopefully you enjoyed this discussion on troubleshooting, and good job, ASUS.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.